appoint the mayor.
You guys sign the bills then?
Oh, there's more bills for me to sign here.
And a check for me.
Is everybody in?
Just go around the room and everyone introduce themselves.
Yeah, really?
I just had another salad today. You don't have homework today.
Actually, not tonight.
I'm sorry.
You have the day off?
I do. I sit in service. I'm lucky.
All right.
Okay, at 6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Jeff Kentz.
Here.
Ron Frederick.
Here.
Ed Kubicki.
Here.
Monica Uhas.
Here.
Jeff Wamble.
Here.
John Frankel.
Here.
John Cargill.
Here.
Carly Voice.
Here.
Thank you. This time we'll open the meeting up to citizens' comments. Any citizens wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing?
This is one of his districts.
Okay.
Victoria Sarza.
Okay, you want to go here, so.
Sure.
Just hop up there, so.
There you go.
Where do you want me? Over here?
Right there, right in that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, perfect.
I'm just here about the bonuses that are distributed. So I know that's like further down on the agenda, so I don't know if I should speak at this time or when it comes up on the agenda.
Well, that'll be for board members, so if you want to speak on anything on the agenda, you can speak on it now.
Okay. So I've been with the county for 16 and a half years. I received $1,200 for the bonus. My partner, who's been there less than a year, received $2,400. The majority of our staff in the courthouse received the $2,400. I've questioned HR as to what parameters did I not meet that I did not receive the $2,400. And I've gotten no response as far as what I have not met. I work at the counter, I work at the front window, I do payment plans, I work with our customers, dependents, on a daily basis, face-to-face. When I went to Rebecca Jaska Mentink initially, she had told me, she's like, I don't know why you didn't get it. I'll forward an email to HR, took about a week and a half to get a response. She got a generic response saying, didn't meet the parameters set forth by the financial committee. And I said, well, what are those parameters? What did I not meet? I see part-time employees that have gotten $2,400. I see staff all around me getting $2,400. I don't understand why I did not. So that is why I'm here.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I guess I was a little concerned that Claire Tappa had expressed to a board member that I'm just a disgruntled employee, and I think that was very appropriate or professional. I don't know what that's based on, but I don't know if that was a part of the determination in the $1,200 bonus, but it certainly made you feel that way.
Okay. Did you hear that, or did somebody tell you that?
I was told that.
Okay. So, I mean, we...
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
No, just I guess I'm concerned about why I did not receive the $2,400.
Okay. Well, there is a report later that will come up and this will be discussed.
Okay.
So, thank you.
That's it.
At this time, we will continue with citizens' comments. Any citizens wishing to speak?
Hi, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I would ask.
Excuse me, you're a supervisor. You can speak anytime.
Well, I'll
speak now.
Yeah, I'll speak now. I would just ask, see if the committee is willing to take up those agenda items first. Vicki has worked all day at the courthouse. If the committee would entertain that, I think we'd be very much appreciated. But of course, that is the prerogative of the committee. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Any other citizens wishing to speak? Any other citizens wishing to speak? Any other citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Reports from the chair. I will just say that I want to thank you all for doing a good job in my absence, and I missed coming to the meeting, and I hear Ron did a great job in my absence. So other than that, I really have no report. We'll move on. Reports from the committee. Seeing none, move on. Approval of the minutes, January 13th, 2022.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Kubicki, seconded by Supervisor Juhas. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are passed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think that's going to probably be a long discussion on this issue for the back pay. And Rodriguez has a question about whether we should operate. And I would move that we move that up on the agenda so we can get that out of the way.
I would second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to move. What we're moving up is the human service or human resources report from administration at the end. So that's what we're moving up. So all those in favor of moving that up, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, passes. We'll take that item first.
Good evening, Chairman, members of the committee, and Youth and Governance. A memo that was requested regarding the issue of the ARPA bonus issued to Victoria Sarzant was included in your material sent prior to the meeting, which explains the process that we went through. So under the direction of the Finance and Administration Committee, we categorized employees into three different tiers. The first, which was a $2,400 bonus for full and part-time employees in positions of elevated risk during the pandemic, and for those employees who put in significant time at the mass vaccination clinics. The second tier was $1,200. That was for all other full and part-time employees that were not in the first tier. And the third was $750 to other employees, including temporary and seasonals. And to be eligible for the bonus, you had to be an employee actively employed in good standing as of November 15th, 2021. So with that guidance, we placed employees into their various tiers. And as I state in the memo, that it was communicated to employees that these bonuses are, or were, intended to recognize the hard work and dedication of county employees throughout the pandemic since March of 2020, and to show our appreciation for continued dedication going forward. When we had to determine where to place employees in terms of positions of elevated risk during the pandemic, some positions were pretty straightforward, including deputies, correctional officers, while others were not. So in some cases, in those cases, we worked with the managers to get clarity on the type of work that employees were doing during the pandemic. We looked at the employees' primary responsibilities. And we looked at whether their primary responsibilities included regular interaction with the public. And of course, we also looked at those who worked at the mass vaccination clinics, and we looked at a threshold of 6.5 hours or more. So once the board approved the resolution, we worked to finalize putting these employees into their various tiers. And we had bonuses paid on December 3rd. That processing started November 21st, so we had to get all of that information to payroll in time for that processing. The input we received regarding Ms. Sarza from the circuit court managers relating to her primary responsibilities led her to be categorized as Tier 2. In the office where she worked, there could be two employees that have the same job title, while one might be assigned primarily to work the counter and interact with the public more often than another that may not have. And based on the information we received, Ms. Sarzant did not. She did raise the question regarding her placement in Tier 2. We again inquired with the circuit court managers, and we were told that while she had temporarily assumed additional counter work coverage after a co-worker went out on leave on November 1st, that her interaction with the public was still less than 25% of her position or her primary responsibilities. So that's where it stands.
Okay. Questions or comments from the committee? Supervisor Franco, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you define regular interaction, how is that quantified?
Again, we were looking at primary responsibilities, and you know, less than 25% of a job, minimal interaction with public was. We had that interaction with the manager to determine if it was a primary responsibility.
So would 50% or more be considered regular interaction? And
yes, generally yes.
Okay. And did you have that? Was that a scale that you were using in some way, or?
It's what their managers were communicating to us in terms of how much interaction they had with the public. So, okay. For example, our HR assistant, who sits at the front of our department, who would serve the public if they come in, we have very occasional public that comes up to our front counter, or employees that come up to the front counter, and she did not qualify for the 2400.
So you're saying this individual was in a similar scenario as Ms. Sarza?
I'm using another example of an employee who has some counter responsibilities, but it's not a primary part of her job.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You done, Supervisor Franco?
Yes, I am.
Supervisor yeah. Wamble.
So you're saying, if I heard you right, that Ms. Sarzan's manager made this decision, forwarded up here, and you're representing that right now? Am I correct?
No. So we reached out to managers in the cases of employees where it wasn't obvious in terms of where they fell. So the business partners, you know, they work with their individual groups of employees, and they worked with the managers to find out, okay, help us understand whether these employees would fall into these categories based on their primary responsibilities.
Whose ultimate decision is it? Was it yours? Basically, based on all the criteria?
Yes, it was human resources.
Okay. Because my question was going to be, is the manager here to speak? But that may not be necessary based on what you're saying, correct?
We were acting off of their information. They were not making the decision. They did not say, put this employee here or this employee here.
Okay, thank you.
Patty, you had something to add?
No, I was going to clarify just exactly what you said.
Supervisor Frederick, you have the floor.
This whole thing was ready to go 2 weeks ago, and it came back to us, obviously everybody knows that, through a motion by Supervisor Rodriguez. It came back to us and said that, and the concern that I raised on the floor was, when does this stop? Okay, because we're gonna wait, and anybody could come forward and say, gee, I didn't get my 12, somebody got 12, somebody got 750, whatever. So I wanted them to vote on it last time, and obviously the board referred it back. You're saying that you followed the criteria, and this person that spoke tonight didn't meet the $2,400 criteria, right?
Correct.
But my concern was that, are there any more gonna be coming forward, you know? Because I'm concerned, what you said, I agreed with, what you're saying now is that she did not fall in that category, okay? According to the information you got from the supervisor. Okay, so where were you now? We got a resolution that came back, so we got two choices. We can send it back like it is, if you're telling it, if we go along with what you're, or we could just, I mean, I want to do this, okay?
Supervisor Frederick.
But as far as...
Let me give you some clarification. There's three issues that were sent back from the board when I wasn't there.
Okay.
This is one issue. The second issue is Supervisor Rose's. And the third issue is the resolution that was forwarded from this committee to the board with our approval. Okay. So from what I understand, those and the motion, Supervisor Rodriguez did not make a passing motion on the board floor. He made a motion that didn't, I don't know where it went or anything, but they referred it back. Supervisor Grady evidently referred it back and it passed to come back with that, just the seasonals. But they asked us to look at these other things. And so I did that. Right, okay.
That was the objection I had that night. I said, where does this stop?
Right, okay. I just wanted to keep going. You have the floor.
No, I'm good. I'm ready to make a motion, but well, I'll listen to anybody before I make any motion.
Well, there's no motion to be made on this.
Well, we have to make a motion to send it back.
We do, but that's not what we're taking up right now. What we're taking up right now is her report to us regarding this complaint. So we're having a discussion on that. There's no item before us that's being voted on or anything to that effect.
There's nothing on the agenda tonight to send this back?
The resolution regarding the seasonal employees was sent back. Yeah. And you could certainly make that motion when it comes to that.
Okay. That's up later.
Right. Okay. Is everybody clear on that?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. So continuing on with the questions here. Supervisor Franco.
Was Ms. Sargent, I think she said that she was never told the reasons as to why she didn't qualify for Tier 1. Can you address that?
Certainly. So all employees were informed of the tiers and the qualifiers. So in the first part of my report, in which I shared with the committee this evening, was communicated to all employees. So for the 2400 level, it's full part-time employees in positions of elevated risk during the pandemic, and those who put in significant time in the mass vaccination clinics. And the response to Ms. Sargent was that her primary responsibilities did not meet the first tier.
Okay. And so in that letter or email or whatever it is, it was clear, you specified what the parameters were for the
yes.
first tier and second tier.
Yes, that went out to all employees that received bonuses. And the assistant director of HR replied to Ms. Sargent with a phone call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, so when Ms. Sargent spoke to us, she mentioned that the parameters, I don't know if she said that they weren't communicated to her or wondered what they were or something, but you've addressed that they went out to all the employees that got bonuses. Also that you gave no response to them when she questioned what tier she was in. Did you, and this memo says you responded. You responded, correct?
Human Resources did respond to her. The
okay.
Assistant Director of HR, which happens to be the business partner that oversees the downtown campus, including Circuit Court.
So there was a response sent to her from your department?
Yes,
okay.
By phone.
Then, from what I understand, you looked at it a second time and went back to her managers and talked to them about these elevated duties and had other questions. So you not only did it once, you did it twice. Is that correct?
Correct. After we received the initial inquiry from Ms. Sargent, we reached back out to the managers to confirm the situation. And then we responded.
Okay. So just for the record, you you got the manager's input first, you put her in one of the parameters that was communicated, and then you did not, you heard back from her that there was an issue, you went back to the managers, and they basically confirmed what they had said initially. So, I mean, from my point of view, the finance committee is not an appeal hearing of these bonuses. So we can't be addressing everybody who, I mean, this was sent back to us to look at that, and that's why we're having this discussion. But we're gonna go down quite a slippery slope if we start addressing everybody who's not comfortable with a bonus that they got. That's my opinion. So I've reached out and done my due diligence. I've talked to her manager. I've talked to HR. I've talked to Patty. And I look at what was done here, and I'm not going to say all these bonuses are perfect. We tried to do the right thing. And HR tried to do, with the guidance they had, the right thing. So I've done my research. I'm comfortable with the way it sat and the memo that's going to be going out to the board prior to the next board meeting. So that's my opinion on this issue. Does anybody else have any questions or comments?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to whoever can answer this. It's my understanding that a second attempt to, or wasn't an attempt, it was successful. There was a second communication with Ms. Sarzant's direct supervisor, who you're saying did reiterate that she fell into the $1,200 category. Was any attempt made after the last board meeting where I conveyed to the board as well as to administration that the court clerk herself told me that she believed Ms. Sarzant should have been in the $2,400 category? And follow up question to that, would she ultimately get the say? Could she go to HR and say, I understand one of my managers said this, I feel not just Ms. Sarzant, any employee should be in this category, and would you go along with that?
Okay, so for the first part of that,
let me, you mean the clerk of court, or who are you talking?
Becky.
Becky, okay, go on.
So the first part of that, yes, I did a third time confirm that we had accurate information upon which we acted in terms of primary responsibilities. And if a director or manager came to us and said, this person should have this amount of money just because I say so, it's not how this would be done. We had direction by the finance committee and the board, and we put people in those criteria. If someone disagreed and felt they needed to go into another category, they would have probably needed to take that up with the county executive's office or something else.
So just to clarify, that third attempt, was that with her managers or was that with Becky herself?
So there's the clerk of courts, and there's also a court services manager that we conferred with, Laura Yocum.
So yes, then you, yes or no, you did confer with Becky herself?
Yes.
And what did Becky tell you?
She confirmed that we had the correct information about primary responsibilities.
Okay, and I don't want this to be skewed into an elected officer saying that because I say so they should get this. I'm just, my question was, would the same question, I guess, I'll ask for the sheriff or the district attorney, or the district attorney I don't think applies here, but other Reggie downstairs or whoever, if one of those elected folks had come to you and said, hey, my manager placed an employee in this category, I feel for these reasons that they belong in this other category, who is your team listening to, the manager or the elected who oversees that?
Um,
Hold on, I'm not understanding
that. Yes.
I'm not understanding that. And so I can see by the look in her eye, she's not.
So let me explain that again. Let me rephrase it this way.
Cross examination.
If down in the clerk's office, in Reggie's office, we had Michelle confer to you, these are the categories that all the gals fit in. Reggie took a look at that and said, I think they're all right, but you know, employee John Doe, I think he belongs here. And that information is then conveyed to your team. Who was your team putting the weight on? The manager or okay. the elected official who leads the office?
So in other words, let me ask you a question that he's asking. Do both of the head of the department and the manager confer on the information given to you, I think is his question?
So in your two examples, for Reggie is the person we would have sought the information from if we had question about an employee's primary responsibilities, because there's her deputy clerk, but Reggie is the person we would have gone to. In the case of circuit courts, which is a much larger staff, Ashley Letterman conferred with the clerk of courts, the court services manager, and the fiscal manager, Bethany, as well.
And all Bethany three?
Loughran, yes.
Okay.
And they conferred to you where Ms. Sarzan was put?
They confirmed the primary responsibilities. Yes,
the criteria.
And then we placed the employees into the tiers.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll say this, and I'm not accusing you or you of anything, or finance or anything like that, but it sounds like Ms. Sarzant and myself were told different things by the same people who were in it, and those people were catering what they told us to who they were talking to, and that's disappointing. Because there are employees like Ms. Sarzant who are not afraid to stand up for themselves, and who are not afraid to say, this is what I deserve, and this is why I deserve it. But there are also employees who are afraid to ruffle feathers. And if it's happening here, it's happening throughout the county, and then that's disappointing, and that's all I'll leave it at that.
Okay, anything else?
Thank you.
No problem. All right, at this point, if there are no other questions, we are going to move on from this part. Her report to us is complete. If anybody has any questions, concerns, certainly you can raise that at a later date. But this was a report that I wanted to hear based on the fact that this came back from the county board to us to examine. And that's why I had the memo put as far as what happened. And I made all the calls. And so after all three of those responded to you, she still was under 25%. And I think that's the criteria. And that's why you, or not you, your department put her in that parameter. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your report.
You're welcome.
CABA fourth quarter report, item 6.
Good evening, Brock Portillo, Finance Director for the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, here to report on the fourth quarter loan reports. Kind of cruise through the reports here and then hit on a couple of other items going on in the community in terms of economic development. On the first page, the EDA revolving loan report, what you'll see there, no new loan activity, just regular principal and interest collection. For the quarter, you will see one outstanding commitment or approved loan of $200,000. That is a loan that was approved for Falcon Plastics USA. Falcon is a specialty packaging company, primarily based out of Canada. They purchased the old Mondi Akersol building in Lakeview Corporate Park. This will be their first U.S. Manufacturing plant and their U.S. headquarters. We approved a loan for $1 million to them. You'll see $200,000 out of this fund and $800,000 in a future fund that I will report on here in a couple of minutes. With that, we also did approve a $100,000 forgivable high impact loan to that company. The next page down is a new report, I believe. We've talked about it in the past, the EDA CARES loan. Cabell was awarded up to $3.6 million in EDA CARES funds. We do not get those funds until, sorry, if you could scroll down another one more page here. Thank you. So we don't actually get these funds until we have loans approved and start to circulate those dollars in the community. So kind of an interesting nuance here is we do have an $800,000 loan there that you see under loan disbursements, but we haven't actually made that loan yet. It's sitting in an escrow account just because of the timing. We have 30 days from the time that we receive the funds from the EDA until they have to go out the door. So it's interesting. This is a new fund. We don't really have anything like this in existence. So for the purpose of that report, just note that it isn't a true loan yet, which is why you don't see it on the next schedule as an $800,000 loan. It's kind of sitting in this temporary escrow fund right now. That will be hopefully in the community as a true loan here by the next time I report back to this committee. As I previously reported, we do have one other loan outstanding to Sam's Leasing Company. That's the real estate holding company for Horizon Systems Machining in the business park at Kenosha. So additionally, I mentioned we also have $800,000 in this fund approved but not yet funded to the Belkin Plastics project. We have also recently approved another $250,000 for an equipment expansion project to Five Star Coatings Group out in Twin Lakes. So what all of that means is when you add all of that up, we've approved about $2.5 million total of the $3.6 million max that we were awarded. So we have a little bit over $1 million to put into play here until, and we have through October of 2022 to do so. And that would take full advantage of the grant that we received and would essentially give CABA and the county another $3.6 million in funding for economic development projects going on in the future. Moving on, in the county revolving loan fund, no new activity there. I would just mention, still again, we have that $500,000 outstanding commitment that pertains to the Nexus Pharmaceuticals project. Or just as you may have heard, there is some back ordering and equipment going on right now, so that project's just taking longer to come to fruition until the payment would be made. Last fund in the report is the High Impact Loan Fund. So a couple of items to note here. Keep going one more page. Okay, so a couple things. You'll see loan principal and interest received back in the quarter. What I had previously mentioned to this committee was we did have an InSinkErator forgivable loan. InSinkErator pulled their operations from Kenosha and relocated and consolidated everything into Racine County. Because they hadn't satisfied the full 5 years of the forgivable loan contract, that was the calculation of what was owed. That's basically principal plus accrued interest for the years that was not met, the performance metrics were not met. So that's why you see that. Typically in the high impact loan, we wouldn't see any principal and interest coming back. You'll also see we did have, the county did fund $200,000 into the fund, which went right back out the door to the NOSCO project. So you've got 200 coming in, 200 coming out. Normally we wouldn't have requested that, but the 457 came in after we sent after we requested the 200, right? And then lastly, the 250 that's outstanding, those pertain to the Nexus Pharmaceutical project that we wait on until they obtain their final occupancy permit. And then I mentioned the $100,000 to Belkin USA. So those are the outstanding commitments in that fund. Other just notable items going on in the community, per our count, we have about 5.4 million square feet of new industrial buildings currently going up throughout the county. We've also recently inked a lease agreement or expansion for an additional 36,000 square feet to the Vonco Products building out in the Salem Business Park. You know, that was announced a few months back with the groundbreaking, but they're really hitting a home run out there. This will put them at a little over 110,000 square feet. Originally, when they came here, they were committed to about 85 jobs. They're upwards approaching 150 full-time employees. So they've been tremendous out in the western part of the county. I talked about the CARES Act funding. Other two more items, the disaster recovery microloan program, that was that ended as of 12/31. If you recall, we were awarded up to $4 million from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation to administer those in $50,000 microloan increments to businesses that suffered damage from the civil unrest in August of 2020. We were able to award the full $4 million out to businesses. Those loans went out to 63 unique businesses. So if you do the math, 63 times 50 doesn't get you to the $4 million. Per the terms of the contract, we did award 17 businesses with second awards of up to $50,000. That was based on a number of criteria evaluated by the finance committee, but tied to extent of the damage, having a specific use tied to the funds, obviously being in good financial standing from the first microloan that was awarded, amongst other things. Last item I'll note is the financial and the single audit are currently ongoing. Field work just wrapped up earlier this week. We will have reports to share to this committee probably in the second quarter. But obviously there, what we're looking for is financial accuracy so that you guys can feel assured that what I'm telling you here is correct and accurate, and also making sure that we're abiding by all the terms of our contracts that we have with the respective governing bodies. So, I will have that in the second quarter, but of course the expectation there is not of good health. That's it.
Okay, any questions or comments? Seeing none, can I have a motion to receive and file the report?
So moved.
It's been moved by Supervisor Kubicki.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Wambolt. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Thank you.
That passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheriff's Department, resolution approving the 2022 Wisconsin OJA Multi-Jurisdictional Drug Task Force Grant for Sea Dog Consortium.
I say that fast 5 times.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tony Gonzalez. I'm the Captain of Operations for the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department. The State of Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance has awarded $211,792 to the Multi-County Consortium Drug Task Force, known as Southeast Area Drug Operations Group, or CDOG. The consortium includes the following counties: Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, Dodge, and Jefferson. Kenosha County's share of this funding for the Sheriff's Drug Unit is $53,140. The resolution requests modification to the 2022 revenue and expense budget in the Sheriff's Department's Drug Unit Subdivision 2170 to account for the $53,140 grant. Kenosha County is the lead agency for the state grant and receives reports quarterly from Racine County, Jefferson County, Walworth County, and Dodge County for reimbursement. This grant management will result in an increase in revenue and expense budgets in the Sheriff's Department Drug Unit Subdivision 2170 to account for the other four counties' portion of the grant award of $158,652, which will be dispersed to the counties on a quarterly reimbursement basis until all funds are expended or the grant period ends, whichever comes first. Our remaining funds at the end of the grant period are returned to the awarding agency. This is a five-year rotation, and we're currently on our second year of that five-year rotation. It is a joint task force, and some of this money will fund overtime, not including benefits, telecom, equipment, and buy money for some of the drug buys that we do. Yeah. That is all.
Thank you, sir. Any questions or comments?
Move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Uhas. Do we, as do whoever leads the consortium that year, do they get any additional funds for the administrative portion of doing it?
Let me just double check here. Not that I can see, sir.
Okay. I mean, that would be the answer, I would think, since it rotates.
Yep.
So every year, whoever does it just has to take care of it. But
correct.
I'm just curious. Okay. Jeff?
I'm sorry. So I heard that you said $27,000 for the drug division. Is that correct?
No. For us, 55.
53,100.
And that's entirely going to the drug
division? Correct.
Okay.
And then that money's split up for different areas, or whether it's overtime, equipment, or the main portion is by drug buy money that we use to buy drugs.
Was that the $27,000 that I heard, or was that just something my
maybe $21,000?
That makes sense. Okay. All right, thank you.
Sure. It's been moved and seconded. I see no other hands. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you again.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Number 8, IT ordinance to create Chapter 22 of the Municipal Code of Kenosha County entitled Broadband Forward Community Ordinance.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's item 9, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking at it. It's item 8.
On the most recent agenda, it's item 9.
Yeah, 9.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 9, yeah.
Hi. Is there anybody is there anything I skipped?
We'll get to it eventually.
Okay. I mean, I got one I got off the internet just now. Was
okay, cool.
That's item 9. I don't know.
Hey, I could make mistakes.
No, I didn't.
No.
All right. So this is number 9.
Roger, right, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Continue. Sorry about that
logistical
question.
I'm here to ask to move forward with the Broadband Forward Ordinance, which would be Chapter 22, which is a new chapter. The Broadband Forward Ordinance would set forth parameters for how we handle any company who comes in and asks for permits related to a broadband project in the county. This is predominantly related to supporting future grant requests that companies may make in order to improve broadband throughout Kenosha County. This would include places like Spectrum, Midwest Fiber, Evergent, TDS, Frontier Communications, anyone who's working to address broadband areas that are underserved or unserved throughout Kenosha County. Certainly through the pandemic, we've all seen that broadband access is really not just an option anymore. It's just nearly a requirement for everyone to fully participate in our economy, education. So we believe that there's a lot of opportunity here with many future grants. Right now, there's a grant coming up March 17th, which is worth $125 million from the state and all the different grant opportunities. And then there's also grants coming up later from the IIJA, that there's $42.5 billion that are going to be available through that grant. And all of these grants within Wisconsin are administered through the Public Service Commission. And one of the things the Public Service Commission does is offer this Broadband Forward Ordinance as a way to certify your community as working to make broadband projects as easy as possible. So by adopting this ordinance, it'll give us additional points on the grant applications. And when I say we, I don't mean Kenosha County. Kenosha County won't fill out any grant applications. Those would be filled out by the companies proposing to increase broadband in Kenosha County.
Okay, any questions or comments on that?
Move to approve.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Supervisor Uhas, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. Any further questions? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 10, Public Works, resolution authorizing administration to undertake and complete a project to relocate the Kenosha County Human Services Building.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the intro.
You're welcome.
This project is the relocation of the Kenosha County Job Center from its current location on the south side of town on Sheridan Road to the Sun Plaza area on 52nd. The genesis of this project goes back several years when the county undertook a study to decide if they should move that building, if they should fix it up, was it offering the right services? And there, I think Smith Group was the name of the original people who came in and did the study. It's kind of morphed over the years, and it was either, I think it was the end of 20 or the beginning of 21 when Bear Development approached and said they would like to look at this project and have us take a peek at them redoing a building in the Sun Plaza. They've already done kids over the kids building there. So last summer, we spent a lot of time reviewing this with the committees and having open houses and other things. So this shouldn't be, and it was approved in the budget, so it shouldn't be a real surprise. But I want to take you through all these documents because there's lots of paper.
Really?
But I know you guys will be able to figure it out.
So,
thanks, Jim.
There is a table of contents in here. It's right.
That's a good way.
It's like this. Thank you, Mary. And then there's attachments, 112 pages of attachments. The lease is on pages 1 through 19. There is a rent schedule on page 20. Exhibit B is rules and regulations for the building. Exhibit C, these are all exhibits to the lease. Exhibit C is the notification we have to give to We Energies. Exhibit D, this whole building is really, it's a series of condominiums that Bear has, and there's certain rules that apply when you have condominiums and you need to lease them out. So there's a whole section in there on the condominium declaration as well as the map, the plat, which is Exhibit D. The lessor's improvement work, which is on page 69, is blank because we really don't know what that's going to be yet. We have an estimate of these costs of $16 million, which is pretty much the same number we've been saying all the way along. Bears looked at it. It's very close to what the original Smith Group number was. We had the Partners in Design, who's the design firm, look at it, so we're fairly confident that that's going to be about the cost to add the improvements. And then there's two other documents here, selling the Sheridan Road building and another document, which is a purchase of 52nd Street building, which we'd have to buy, and then the improvements would be added to that. And then Exhibit H is a couple of construction contracts. They're just samples. These are not documents that we would have. These are documents that Bear would have with their construction company as they build the facility. So you can kind of stop me if you got any questions on these pages, but I'd like to talk about this page next. This is a summary of the dollars and the timing of everything that's in these documents. It's called Schedule 1. Everybody should find it. Okay, and the top is, it's now February of 22. And when we first proposed the budget on this, we had hoped to get everything done and start and have this lease work done the beginning of this year so we and around that timing right now, we could actually start construction. You need an extra one, Patty? I got a whole bunch of extras if anybody wants
them. Right over here, Jim. Go ahead, pass it.
Huh?
Oh, we got it this way. Okay, you're good. Okay. She's straightening me out. Thanks, Mary, for straightening me out.
You're welcome. Just want to take one and pass it around.
I'll share.
It's kind of hard to look inside me, Jim. Got hard enough time to square up.
Everybody here might not have it.
Thanks, Jim.
Sorry. So on the top, the timing, the location is Sun Plaza on 52nd Street. The estimated, starting now, we will start the design phase and be designing all the way through 22. The construction
should begin late this year. It'll take approximately 18 months, maybe a little bit longer, to do the construction. So the construction would be between the end of this year and the middle of 2024. And the middle of 2024, thank you, we would move into the new building at that date. And also at that date, Bayer will buy the old building for $1.6
million. When we move into the new one?
Yeah, it'll all happen around, we'll move out of the old one, move into the new one, it'll be empty, the old one, Bayer will buy it. So it's the middle of, about the middle of 24. And then from the middle of 24 until about the middle of 25, five-year period, the county will lease the new building, the improved new building, from Bayer, and they have to be a landlord for at least 5 years in order for them to receive the credits that they can receive, which we'll get to in a second. So again, we'd rent the place for 5 years, and then at the end, or the middle of 2029, after leasing for 5 years, the county would buy the new building from Bayer.
For how much?
How much, he asked. There's a box right here that says purchase price. Let's talk about it.
I read it in the paper someplace. Okay. $19 million or something?
No, we want to go through all this stuff, and that's why we prepared this sheet.
Yeah, rent calculation. Yeah.
So the hard and soft costs of buying this building, we would purchase the new building, which is the existing building that they have, $2.6 million. The soft costs are acquisition costs, closing costs, whatever. The construction costs, which are the improvements, which is our best estimate right now of what those costs would be, is $16 million. And then the cost of the solar would be solar heating system would be $750,000. So the total gross price is $19.5 million. But we get to pull off of that some money. In these agreements, the county and Bayer will share 50% in any grants that either of us get. So, or credits that we would get. So we have applied for a state grant through, I forget the name of the office, I'll tell you what it is. The Neighborhood Investment Fund grant program from the Wisconsin Department of Administration. They have a couple hundred million dollars of ARPA funds that are eligible to, our building qualifies for the type of, that can get this grant. And we applied for a grant of almost $10 million, just a little short of $10 million, and then we would have to put up another, I think it's $11 million, which is in here. But in the document that we prepared, we have the state grant there of only, I figured conservatively, instead of $10 million, let's use $3.5 million. We get it, and then we split it. We would get one half of that grant. If we get the $10 million, that's great. Then these numbers change. We don't have to spend that amount of money. But what's figured in here for this purpose is one half of the $3.5 million. Now, the new market credits are credits that Bayer can get if they own the place for 5 years, and which would be about $3 million, and they would share that with us half and half. And the solar credit would be, our half would be $82,000. So total credits, using a conservative number for this state grant, would be a little over $3 million, which nets out to a purchase price of $16.1 million. And that's pretty much the number that we've been saying all the way along. I know in our demo, or when we were talking about the numbers, I think $16 million was the price that we were throwing around. So far, does that answer your question, Supervisor Frederick, about
yes,
how much
it's
going to cost us?
I read that 16.1 in the paper someplace, yeah.
So that is the price we would pay in 5 years. Now, if credits come in, or all of a sudden, if they get a grant and it gets added to this list, we get half of it. Half of it comes up. Purchase. Thank you for going like this. And if we get something in addition to this, it's the same thing. So we're automatically going to knock off a bunch of money in these grants. Now the flip, the other side of this page, and again, this is what's in, these are the numbers that are in these documents. The rent calculation is, it's composed of a couple of chunks. The first chunk is a base rent, and that starts with, again, we're calculating a price of the building, soft costs, construction costs, and solar costs, coming up to $16.8 million. But for purposes of calculating this rent, we pull off the full state grant, $3.5 million, and the full value of the new market credits, at which totals $6.5 million. So the base rent is based on $10,350,000. Bear's interest rate that we would in effect over the 5-year period be paying their interest on their loan for that 5 years as part of our rent payment, that's $362,000. As far as it's 130,000 square foot, there's Bear's industry standard number that they use for CAM, which is common area maintenance. Common area maintenance covers real estate taxes, it covers cleaning expenses for personnel that they may have in there doing that. It's their insurance, if they had any utilities, those are probably the, and their maintenance fee as for being a landlord. That will all come out to about $240 a square foot for $312,000 a year. Now at the end of every year, we will go back and see how much they actually spent. Say if they had $30,000 or $40,000 in there for their people doing our cleaning, and we did it, we would renegotiate that number. If they didn't spend it, that number would come down and it would save us some rent. So we do that on an annual basis, it's all included in the lease. But for what would start out with would be $674,000 annually, which is $519 a square foot. And we ran a whole bunch of comps for various types of real estate, and I can go through them, but 519 is lower than the rate for industrial rental space locally. It's lower than the rate for rental space locally. It's lower than the rate for office space locally, a lot lower than that. In fact, when we charge our customers currently out of the existing facility, we charge them at $16 a square foot. So for 5 years, we pay $519 a square foot, and then when that's over, we would purchase the building. So that's mainly what's included in all these documents. The purchase, and the one thing that's not in here, which really nets out against that $16.1 million, is we sell them the building for $1.6 million that we would also get in 2 years. So I'm going to take a breath. Let
need some water,
Supervisor Franco.
I'm good right now.
Yeah, I don't want you to get too dehydrated.
Here, some water.
Supervisor Franco, you have the floor.
Jim, didn't occur to me the other night, but and I don't know if I'm looking at this correctly, but does the 5-year rent at $674,000 comes to about $3.3 million? Does the, if the sale goes subtracted from that, is the difference then added to the total purchase price?
I'm sorry.
Am I misunderstanding that? Please go ahead.
I think so. The interest rate that's being calculated, that's just a pass through cost. So there's no, it's like a typical cost of occupancy. If the county was to issue bonds and then pay the debt service on those bonds,
okay,
so that's just the pass through cost. So that is neither added nor deleted from
the
purchase price, correct?
Okay.
Yeah. What's deleted from the purchase price, and I think the way that Jim set it up is the 50% of the benefit for some of these grants that some of the grants only we can get and utilize, and some of the other grants are in conjunction with the county, and so we're applying for grants feverishly here to see if we can continue to connect that number down.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Another thing I should probably mention is we had another outside firm, Tom Santarelli from Montegrano's shop here, look at all these documents, as well as our court counsel. They checked them out, and this is kind of their standard formula because they have done this type of thing before. So we started with their documents. We went back and forth. We made a few modifications to it. Our court counsel said we need to, adjust this stuff. We work with John Hotfed here, the lawyer from from Bayer. And the whole process went pretty smooth, so then we took it to Santa Raleigh just to have him check it out. He's a noted local real estate guy. Said all the docs look good. So what you have here is pretty much what we're going to end up with. Is anybody want to, John or Ray? Or
okay. John, you have the floor.
Thank you. I may have misheard you, but I think when you were talking about the state grants, you said 3.5 was a conservative estimate, is that
yeah.
right? So is that, like, are we sure that that's the floor, that we're definitely going to be able to qualify for that, or, like, how does that
That's our best ask. Well, we applied for a loan for $10 million. We think we'll get a third of it.
Okay, so that number could technically change. It could be lower, but you find that unlikely.
Correct. Okay.
Anything else? No. Supervisor Franco.
I just like to say I'd really like the idea of the solar. I think that's really, really cool, for lack of a better word. So there'll all be panels on the roof and.
Yeah, there's a firm up in Milwaukee. They're really the largest in the state that do that, and that's one of the credits too, where you whoever owns the building has to utilize the credits, so there wouldn't be any economic benefit for the county to use those. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways that we're able to do that, and it should. You know, the payback is about 7 years. So from an operating cost standpoint, once they're up,
the long term savings.
Yeah. Correct. And so they would be on the roof, and so we would hire them to come down. And they've already looked at the overall written plan, and so they'll put together a full program for it.
Thank you.
Anything else, sir?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Supervisor U.S., you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This went to Public Works on Monday.
Yes.
And did it pass unanimously from Public Works?
I believe so.
Because I don't see it.
It was
marked?
Yes.
No, because we didn't have it yet when we posted the agenda.
But it was unanimous.
It was unanimous.
Yeah, I believe it was.
That's quite a pride of feat that you got through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right, I have a couple questions. First, John, that's an excellent point. We could get nothing from this. I mean, we could send in a grant and get nothing. So I always like to look at worst case scenario. And that's exactly what you asked, and I would like to do that. So if we're looking at a total purchase price of $16,117, according to my very rough calculations, it could be 1.9 higher than that, because the purchase price of the building's not built in here. So that would reduce it by that. And then we would not get 1.9 of that 3.5. So really this could be about $18 million. Worst case scenario, if nobody gets any grants. So, and I'm not saying that's gonna happen, but I like to think like that. Ray?
So Mr. Cuthbert, correct me if I'm wrong, but because you haven't put the 1.6 million that Bayer would be paying for the purchase of our building, which would be to the positive, they actually break it down close, pretty darn close to what Mr. Cuthbert is.
Because it's about 17 million.
Be offset to the 1.75 he's got in there, right?
You take the 16.1, add back the 1.7, which would bring it to 17.8 or 17.9. You take off the 1.6 and you'd be at 17 million.
Well, you're saying the $3.5 million that you're using over here, I thought that was just our share. You're saying that's the share by both of us split?
This number here? 16.
No, I'm on the other side. The $3.5 million state grant.
Oh, this is the rent calculation. Would the rent go up? Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
No, he's mixed them up.
Right.
Okay.
Sure. Patty, why don't you
go ahead? Shoot.
Okay. So the anticipation is the grant will be $3.5 million.
Right.
We will get half of it that will offset the purchase price. But the whole amount comes down to the cost that's borrowed that creates the calculation for the interest. Yeah. Which is part of the rent.
That's fine. I don't care about that. All I'm looking at is over here the what it's going to cost at the end. What we pay in rent and that wash through and all that stuff, that's fine. I trust them to work that out. That's fine. The thing, though, is so the state grant, you are putting half, you're saying worst case scenario we get 3.5. And we would get half of that.
Yes.
Okay. So there was a misunderstanding on my part. I thought you meant after it was split, we would have $3.5 million. So that's not what I'm hearing. So you're right. Even if you take the one at 1.75 and you do the 1.6, I mean, yeah. Okay. So we're right around the 16 million mark. Okay. The numbers work for me. That's good. So now let's move on to the second point. What's going to happen after you buy the building on Sheridan?
Not sure yet. We're going to do a lot of study. You know, we'll have some neighborhood discussions. You know, there's going to be a big demolition cost. Building's got to come down. So okay. I think we'll realize that.
So you're going to knock it down and do something else there?
Yeah. I think the functional obsolescence of that building, it doesn't serve much of a purpose.
Well, let's just speak fondly of the building now. All right, since it's in my district.
Okay.
All right.
I'm sure you can get you a room there.
I could go in there and get myself a room. But anyway,
pretty close. Okay. We're talking about functional obsolescence.
Okay. Just settle down, Spanky. All right. So you're going to probably raise it, and what you do there is okay.
Yeah, all right. I mean, we have some ideas.
Okay. I mean, I just don't want to see some type of blight going on there and anything like that. So, I mean, you buy the building and it sits there empty and I got people calling and...
Yeah, I mean, that's not to okay. anybody's benefit.
All right, cool. All right, I'm comfortable. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Was there a motion on the floor? I forgot.
I move you. I'll second it.
It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. Any further questions before I call it? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
Number 11, land information. Resolution to accept and utilize Wisconsin Land Information Program grant funding for Kenosha County Land Records Modernization Project Activities. Oh, I read that real good.
You did.
That flowed.
Trippingly off the tongue.
You've got the floor.
Good evening, Chairman. Good evening, committee. My name is Scott Schutze, the Director of the Division of Land Information. Thank you for the opportunity to present this budget modification to you today. In late October, we were informed by the State of Wisconsin Department of Administration that we were awarded a $60,000 grant related to the Wisconsin Land Information Program. We did not put those numbers in our budget because we were unsure on the exact amount. Now that we know it's $60,000, I'm requesting to put those monies into our budget and have a corresponding expense for that exact amount so that there's no levy impact using these funds. Our statutorily required land council here at the county has approved the use of these funds for a scanning and indexing project for the Register of Deeds office, and if deeds are left over, for some other land-related documents in the treasurer's office. Again, this would have no levy impact, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Does the committee have any questions or comments on this? John?
So the scanning and indexing process, does that just mean moving physical documents to the cloud?
Correct, into digital form. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Kubicki.
I move to approve.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Kubicki, seconded by Supervisor Franco to approve. Any last questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. Number 12, Human Services, resolution to modify the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services 2022 budget using ARPA funds, Resources Center.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for letting us talk about this tonight. So we are asking for up to $150,000 to fund...
Name for the record.
Rebecca Dutter. I'm the Director of the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we are asking for up to $150,000 of ARPA funds to be able to fund two second or shift type for people in our Mental Health and Substance Abuse Resource Center. This is sort of the beginning of our change from our reactive approach to behavioral health to more of a proactive approach. So our hope is that by adding people into our resource center, we will be able to take the calls that normally would go to crisis on a second shift that could go to the resource center. About a quarter to a third of all of the calls that come into crisis are actually resource center calls. But because there are not resource center people on second shift or later in the evening, those all get funneled to a crisis worker. Crisis workers, as we know, we want them actually responding to the crisis in the community and not, you know, helping people find housing resources, which can be done by a resource center person. So our hope is that this will, again, enable our crisis staff to be able to respond to those that are of the most need in the community and add some additional benefits to the community by allowing to have resource center people available in the late afternoon to evening to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Supervisor Uhas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many people will this $150,000 allow you to put in place?
Two.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'll be able to cover 7 days a week.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Sure.
Anything else?
No.
Supervisor Franco, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just out of curiosity, I'd read that there is $4 million in ARPA funds for this. For this division, how much has been used? Just out of curiosity.
This is so the far? First request.
Oh, first request.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Patty, you have clarification.
In front of you, you have that outline of the ARPA plan with the highlighting. So, if you have any questions on where the funding is.
Oh,
at.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, as you recall, the items in green are reserved, but were not budgeted. And the request would be made as the needs arose. So this is in that first line of public health, behavioral health.
Okay.
And again, even though we have an allocation in each of the years, if the need is higher in 1 year, we can draw from future money. Ooh. Or if you don't use it all, it will roll to the next year.
That's okay.
That's okay.
These are going to be permanent employees.
They're contracted employees through Kenosha Human Developmental Services,
okay,
who is our contracted employee for emergency mental
health. I'm concerned about any of these ARPA funds that we use because it's 4 years from now they ain't around anymore. I thought that was it, but I wasn't sure about the picture. Okay.
Supervisor Wambolt, you have the floor.
So when you were describing this and we have this need for these resource workers because crisis is taking calls regarding resource. Well, I know crisis typically works with people contemplating suicide
at
a
times,
lot.
Yes.
So is there a delay right now in some people getting the service of crisis because they're working on resource type problems when there is someone out there whose life might be in danger?
It's typically not delayed to the person. It's a lot, oftentimes it's delayed to law enforcement because law enforcement is then off and they're talking to this person who might be suicidal, or there might be a delay in the emergency room because the crisis worker is on the phone or dealing with another, you know, a person who really wants to vent, because that happens a lot in the mm-hmm. evening. There aren't counseling agencies open in the late afternoon and evening, so a lot of times these folks call crisis, and we really need to divert those calls so that there is someone actively answering those calls, but it does not need to be an emergency mental health crisis worker.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Who are you contracting with?
Kenosha Human Developmental Services, or
okay.
KHDS.
Is that in there someplace? Did I miss it?
Okay. I don't know if we put it in there or not. They are currently our emergency mental health provider of our contracted
right.
services.
I looked this over and I thought this was an excellent first step. I mean, we have a lot of steps to take in regards to mental health, and I think this is a good first step. So I support this 100%. Any other questions or comments? Patty?
I would just like to point out to the committee that there is a slight change that will be made on the budget modification. The account number for the ARPA funds will reflect the fund in which
the
funds are being
fund.
Used.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll move to approve.
Oh, okay.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Uhas, seconded by Supervisor Wamble. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. Doesn't look like you're moving.
you got one more.
Human Services, resolution to modify the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services 2022 budget using ARPA funds, treatment center.
So we currently have what's called our TAD grant, which is our Treatment Alternatives and Diversion Grant. It's a 5-year grant that actually started this year, so it started in 2022. We've had the grant for 5 years previous. What happened this year is when we applied for the grant, the governor had some additional funds that were going to be in the governor's budget to fund additional treatment court models across the state. When they put out the RFP, or the request for us to apply for this grant, they were not aware of whether or not it was going to pass in the governor's budget. So what ended up happening was, with the amount of money that we ended up applying for, we did not receive because the state did not issue those funds. We will have the opportunity at the end of 22 to apply for the extra money that the governor did pass in his budget that will be available. So we're asking for up to $60,000 to fund this just for this year, and then we will be applying for the extra dollars. The Treatment Alternative and Diversion Program is a court program where an individual who is in the criminal justice system because they've created a crime, and they have a substance abuse or a mental health issue, would go through, it's a pretty rigorous 18 to 24 month program where there are steps that they have to take in order to have some leeway with their charges. What we fund is we fund a coordinator, we fund urinalysis, so they have to have random urinalysis done to maintain in the program. There's also incentives based in as the individuals progress through the program. There's some incentives. We also pay for bus passes because a lot of our participants aren't able to get to the job center to do the urinalysis. And then we also send the team to a state conference so that they can keep in the most recent, up to date on the most recent treatment court research that's out there. So our hope is that this is just a 1-year event, and then we'll be able to reapply for the additional funds at the end of this year.
Questions by the board? John?
No, I'm good.
So,
oh, that John.
I've got some other names for you.
Yeah, I know. I know.
He's John.
Sorry, I didn't remember
myself. Okay.
Oh, okay. So you applied for the grant last year, and now you'd like to cover it with ARPA funds so that you can apply for it next year.
So we got the grant for 5 years. So the first year, this year is 2022 is the first year of a 5-year grant. However, we will be able to apply for additional funds. We got the same amount of funding that we had for the previous 5 years. There is additional money that was approved in the governor's budget that the state will be releasing at the end of this year. It just happened that the application date and the governor's passing of his budget sort of crossed. So the funds that they initially said were available, they withdrew. So what we applied for, we did not get. Nobody got, because the funding was not, they didn't approve it in time. So there is this lump of funding that will be available at the end of 22 that we will be able to apply for to make up the difference that we would need the $60,000 to get us through the first year for.
And are you fairly certain that the county can secure that additional funding then?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think we're in better position now than when we applied for the grant at the end of last year. Our treatment court, our participation has gone up. We've hired a coordinator who's going to be starting on Monday, and I think it will really impact the program to become a pretty good success.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So this $60,000 is to fund the coordinator position?
It's to add to the fund in general. So it could go towards the urinalysis, it could go towards the cost of the incentives. It will just be added to the fund so that we are able to pay for the entire program.
At the end of the year, if we don't get the grant, what are we gonna cut?
Well, our hope was we wouldn't have to cut anything. Our hope would be that through the addition of the increase of the Medicaid dollars and some of our other programs, we would be able to offset a $60,000 program.
Okay. So we're not creating any positions that are going to be in jeopardy if we don't get a grant, you feel?
No.
Okay.
No, this is a 5-year grant. We have secured the funds for 5 years.
I understand that, but you want the $60,000 for something else. And if the $60,000 doesn't come,
right,
And I'm not saying it won't.
Right.
I just.
But there's always a possibility.
Right. I just always like to talk about that to make sure that we're not having somebody hung out there and then they're expecting to continue on or what we're going to do with the money. Because, I mean, I understand that we're in the first year of a 5-year grant, and that's great. So that the certain stable things that we have are there.
Right.
But this extra 60, and you're comfortable with the fact that you think you're going to get it, but we're not going to lose people or anything down the road.
No.
Okay.
No, we would not. No. And I am pretty comfortable that we would be able to make up the additional if we're not able to.
Our last speaker was comfortable. He'd get 350,000? Yeah.
Well, we did pretty good with our budget last year.
I'm not saying anybody's not going to get it. I just like to explore all possibilities. Any other questions or comments from the board? Go ahead.
I would just like to make the same comment. The budget modification is going to be adjusted to report the proper account for the ARPA.
I would hope you'd take it out of the right spot. Okay.
I'll move for approval.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Juhas.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Supervisor Franco. Any other last questions or comments by the board? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Apparently I'm sitting.
You must like us.
Number three,
like to put
here
all
we go.
Your stuff together.
I know, just put me in one.
This is your favorite thing to do for tonight. Mm. I know it.
Of course it is.
Okay, update on behavioral health. So why don't you give us an update on where you are with our dealings with Lake and that type of thing.
So where we are with Lake Behavioral Health is we are actually in a really good spot. So we started in July of 2021, sort of investigating having a closer hospital to be able to handle our emergency mental health detentions. Currently, those folks, if we're not able to find a local place, which is more often than not, have to go up to Winnebago, which is in the Green Bay-ish area. So it's a 2.5 to 3 hour drive. They have to be accompanied by law enforcement. So there's a number of different reasons why that is not a real good idea. First of all, it takes law enforcement off of the road. Secondly, it's really hard to do a good plan with a person who's 2.5 hours away. Family can't really be involved. I mean, it's just a struggle. So we started in 21 looking at where can we go. We got a little boost when Illinois in August passed a law to be able to allow other states to be able to utilize their mental health hospitals. Lake Behavioral Health is in Waukegan, so it's about a 15-minute drive from here versus a 2.5 hour drive going up to Winnebago. Previously, we would not have been able to utilize them because it did require a law change in the state of Illinois, which did pass. Shortly thereafter, in September, we sent a contract over to Lake to sort of start the ball rolling of how can we make this work. We are now on the second revision of that contract. It just got sent off at the beginning of February. We sent our changes. We do not expect to have any further revisions sent back to us. So the next step after we receive this, which we anticipate hopefully in the next 4 to 6 weeks, is this will have to go to the state DHS to approve. From there, it will go to the Department of Justice because law enforcement will have to start creating some agreements to be able to do mutual aid across the state lines. So we're close as far as the longest part of this is. The contracting part is always the longest part. Our corporation counsel has been already working with the attorneys with the Department of Health and Human Services. So when it gets to their level, we don't really anticipate any problems either because they have helped us actually with the contract language that we've already submitted to Lake.
Who helped you with that?
Corporation Counsel.
No, but you said they ran it by DHS or something?
They did. They ran it by the attorneys at the Department of Health and Human Services to help us with the contract language. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, we are one of the first counties that has done this type of an agreement with a hospital across state lines. Which is interesting because it happens all the time on the Minnesota border, but I'm not sure that there's a Minnesota law is different, so we don't have as many challenges as we have with what's happening right now. So our hope is that soon we will be able to get the contract back. It'll be sent up, and then it'll go to the Department of Justice, and we can start helping getting people to Lake instead of having to go all the way to Winnebago. And that will help our budget.
That will help our budget.
Patty?
That was actually my question. I know Tammy's not here, so I don't know. Have you guys done any projections on what kind of impact this will have on your budget?
Yes.
Yes,
it'll be a significant impact. What they have quoted us as far as price is significantly less than what we're currently paying at Winnebago. And I hesitate to give figures because until we actually have it in a contract, you know, you never know what can happen.
Right.
But we were just, was it just $60,000 is what the city of Kenosha paid in overtime for law enforcement to go back and forth to Winnebago. So there will be a great, there will be a reduction of costs for us, but there will also be a reduction of costs for the county sheriff's department, for the village of Pleasant Prairie, for the city of Kenosha, the village of Twin Lakes. Everybody will have a significant savings.
Supervisor Wamble.
Are you pretty confident that the quality of service at Lake will be at least as good as we provide in Wisconsin?
Yes, I'm pretty confident about that. I mean, we will obviously keep close tabs on that, and fortunately with it being so close, we're actually going to be able to do some drop-ins to be able to assure that care is there, and we have every intention of doing that. I think that is, we don't have as much familiarity as we do with Lake that we do with our Wisconsin hospitals, so
but you will.
We're going to have to make sure. You know, we've had an opportunity to tour it. Supervisor Gens had an opportunity to tour it. It is a beautiful facility. It is set up. You couldn't set it up better. I mean, that doesn't have any indication on care, but right now, all of the signs are pointing towards this being a really good arrangement.
Okay, and one other thing, just since we're overall general topic here, is there any talk or any ways that you know of that law enforcement can be removed from the transport of especially Chapter 51 patients so that they don't have that negative, you know where I'm going with this, mm-hmm. where, you know, they have that mm-hmm. impact where if they need help in the future, they're not going to call because all of a sudden they're put in handcuffs.
Right.
Are there other, is there a template out there in the country somewhere where that's not done?
Yeah, actually, the city of Kenosha is doing it right now for COVID positive patients.
Who's doing it then?
There's a provision in Chapter 51 in which law enforcement can actually give the authority to a transport company, but it has to be, like you're familiar with the old Lock-A-Mode, it has to be a secured transportation that the law enforcement has a specific contract.
Well, my understanding is that being done right now? Did it change back to where that's not happening?
The last couple detentions of people that were COVID positive, it was being
done. Was that in the last couple of days?
No, that I'm was talking as of last like real, week.
And I'm not 100%, so I don't want to misspeak, right. but I'm not 100% if that didn't switch
yeah,
back.
Yeah, so. As of last week that was happening, okay, whether okay. or not that has happened this week.
But regardless, I'm just wondering, is there a way of not sure. making it so that it's law enforcement that has to transport to handcuffs, back of a right. squad? I mean, you can imagine what that feels like.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is it can be, they can delegate the authority to a transport company, mm-hmm. but they're still going to be restrained.
Right.
Because they have to be, because they're in custody of law enforcement once the 51 detention occurs.
Right, and I understand that. That's why I was just thinking outside the box. How is there any other municipality doing it differently?
Yes, there are municipalities.
And abiding by the law, of course.
Absolutely. Okay. There are that contract with them because they are just not, they don't want to take the time of the officers off the street. They don't feel like the cost is.
Well, I'm even thinking about just the quality for the client or the patient.
Right.
Because that's the ultimate goal, is to fix the problem.
Sure, and not create more, right? So yeah, there are opportunities. The each law enforcement agency would have to have that agreement.
So we're, okay, the bottom line to the answer to my question is we're not really there yet, right?
We could be if the individual agencies were
law enforcement
correct.
Right, correct, okay.
Correct. And actually we just had a Chapter 51 committee meeting where this was a discussion. So law enforcement is aware that this is an option, mm-hmm. and whether or not they'll pursue it or not is outside of the county's jurisdiction.
All right, great. Thanks.
Sure.
Carly?
Thank you. Does Lakes have the space for all of Kenosha County's patients to go straight there?
They do. It's a very large.
What was your question? I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry. I asked if Lakes has enough space for all of Kenosha County's patients to just go straight there.
You know, and I don't know that we'd have to use it for every single one. I mean, we have what we utilize the Winnebago campus for is for people who have severe and persistent mental illness. So it's your people who have behavioral issues or they're high risk of suicide that can't be treated at a local hospital. There are some individuals under Chapter 51 that we have to go, we have go to Rogers, or we have go to Aurora Psychiatric. But those are typically individuals where their acuity is not as high as the individuals that need a setting like Winnebago. So not all of our people in Kenosha are actually going to Winnebago, about 85% are. So it's a high number, but yes, Lake has indicated to us that they have the capacity. They also have some specialized units, which is really, I think, wonderful for us. We don't have a geriatric psychiatric facility that we can send any of our older residents to. And if you look at the age of people who are having pretty significant mental health issues, it's actually going up and up and up. So having that available to us, I think, is a win on our part too, because they definitely need specialized care.
Supervisor Yoss, you had a question.
Well, my question, thank you, Mr. Chairman, was similar to Carly's. I was curious as to how many beds Lake County would have. And then my other question is, on an average per year, how many are going to Lake Winnebago? Or Winnebago?
To Winnebago?
Yeah. That was a good question. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think any are going to
not
a split.
To Lake. Yeah. Yeah.
So in our numbers of, thankfully, our emergency mental health detentions are actually going down over the years. So in 2020, we had 245. Of 211 went to Winnebago. In 2021, it went down a little bit. We only had 219 detentions. And I don't have the exact figures because some of those people are still in process because they were detained in December. But I would say, again, between that 85 and 90% number are going to Winnebago.
But to piggyback on that, if I could just jump in, I'm sorry. How long is the stay? Does that factor in? Some stays could be longer, some could be shorter, so that would change
it does.
The whole dynamic.
Correct. And, you know, there are some people that get up to Winnebago and they're able to clear within a couple of days. You know, they just haven't been taking their medication or they need a medication adjustment. There are other folks that have, you know, uncontrolled schizophrenia that can be there for 30 to 45 days. I mean, there's a wide range of the type of care that the individuals need. And unfortunately, right now, we're coupled with the fact that there are not a lot of residential placements open. COVID has really caused a significant reduction in beds in residential care. So we're finding that some people are sitting at the hospitals longer than they need to because there's just no place to discharge them to. Now, we haven't had as much of a problem as some other counties have because we have the care center. And so we are always able to utilize the care center for someone who needs to leave, but we haven't quite been able to find where they need to go next. So that's a wonderful opportunity that we have in this community.
Thank you.
I think not only did I tour Lake, but I got to hear part of their business plan and how they operate with all their different divisions, and I was totally impressed. I am 100% committed to getting this done. I think ultimately, as much as we are the finance committee, we care about our community. And I think mental health is a huge issue within our community, and I think it can be greatly enhanced by using Lake. Okay, then Winnebago, just the distance and the problems that causes. Are huge to families, and that could help people stay be a little shorter, because if you're working on a program and a plan, I'm not the expert, you are, but I would think that would help that plan as well too. So I am very excited by how this is going. I am confident that Lake will do a fine job, and it will be monitored by our capable employees, and that's where we're at. So I wanted this committee to be updated on where we were with that. It sounds to me like we're in the home stretch of it, and I'm really excited, really excited. So any other questions or comments by the committee? All right, seeing none, thank you very
much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Item 15, Human Resources, review and approve administrative proposal for an individual early retirement package.
Good evening again. So under our other post-employment benefit policy, individual early retirement packages are allowed with approval by this committee. So we have brought forward this proposal asking you to consider an individual retirement package for an employee of human resources. And in your materials, you will see a letter from the county executive that sums up the situation quite well. So previously, the county's benefit package included the option for an employee with 30 years of service to retire at the age of 57, 58, or 59 and pay half of the health insurance premium to continue coverage after retirement. In 2013, the current other post-employment benefit policy was approved and put in place. The current policy removed the provision and replaced it with an option that allows employees hired before January 1st of 2003 to retire earlier than age 60, but at that time, the employee loses county coverage, actually between age 50 and 59. They would lose the county coverage, but at age 60, the employee then again becomes eligible to obtain county coverage with the same benefit plan and cost share as active employees. What this proposal is seeking is for a individual package to allow this employee to retire before turning age 60 and continue on the county's health insurance plan by paying 50% contribution toward premium, and then at age 60 would pick up with the regular post-employment benefit, which would be to participate at the same cost as employees.
I did just clear this up for me, sure. Or I'll forget. I mean, you just got done saying in 2013 it was changed so that they have to pay their full health insurance, and at 60, they can get back on the counties. Is that what I heard?
Our current OPEB policy is employees hired prior to January 1st of 2003. If they retire between 60 and 65, they remain on our insurance, the same insurance as active employees, and pay the same rate as employees do. If they retire between 50 and 59, they have to find other coverage until age 60, and then they can return with the same plan and the same rate as employees.
Right.
That's our current policy.
Right. But didn't you just say that this individual would pay only 50% till 60?
That's what this package is proposing and asking for, is that this employee is allowed to retire. The intent is for her to retire in January 2023. Won't yet be age 60, but could continue on the plan by paying 50% of the premium.
Okay, but that's not our policy, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That's not the current
okay.
benefit.
All right. Keep going. I'm sorry, I just needed to clear that up.
I'm not sure I have that much more to
answer. Okay, that's fine too. Supervisor Franco.
So that was our policy up until it was changed in 2013 that someone could retire early and pay 50%.
Correct.
Okay. So basically what you're asking, or what she's asking, is that she get a similar deal, if you will, that we used to have. It wasn't like we've never had it.
Correct.
And the justification is that that this is allowed based upon the new I don't know what you call it, other post-employment benefits policy. So this is perfectly appropriate to have something, an appeal like this. This is not unusual, I guess.
The policy allows for individual retirement packages, so outside of the current benefit, to be considered and approved by the Finance
okay.
Committee. So there is also a financial analysis that is included and
right.
that was conducted by Finance. And if this employee were to continue until age 60 working for us, it would actually cost us a little more money than allowing her to retire at this earlier age, and with the idea that her replacement would probably come in lower paid because
right.
it would be newer. So it's not a cost to the county from that perspective.
Okay.
And potentially some savings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor U.S.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clara, how many employees have received similar packages like this?
There haven't been any recently. The last one that I'm aware of was in 2011.
Okay. And how many years did that person have of service?
I don't know offhand.
It was about the same.
About the same?
Yeah, I think it was 30 or more.
30 or more? Thank you.
Supervisor Wamble.
Does finance or do you see a negative to doing this? Is there a reason we shouldn't approve this? Based on the numbers or?
It's a potential wash. I mean, it's a potential savings, but it's really about a wash dollar-wise, so there really isn't a cost to the county. So from that perspective.
Okay. Or I'm just looking for any negative, why we wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'll bring one up in a minute.
Okay.
What is the cost of the family planning you're talking about, right?
Yes.
What is the cost of the family plan right now?
The budgeted premium is, I believe,
$25,500.
So what we would in fact be doing is allowing her to get that at half price, which would cost the county $25,000 over 2 years. More than anybody would, right?
Yes, over 2 years.
So it's $25,000 difference is what we're talking about, because 2 years at half is okay. So what will be the starting rate of a new person coming in? How much would you? I know you mentioned that, but I didn't hear it.
So the financial analysis is attached.
I saw that part, but I
yeah.
What's the bottom of an E7 wage?
E7 starting, that's what we want. Between the starting E7 and the top of E7, because he's probably at the top of E7, right?
I can run and grab that.
She is at the top of E7? Oh, there it is. Okay.
You're
throwing on the board.
Probably on here too, but. I'm
good,
thank you.
Okay. My only problem with this whole thing, and I really don't, I'm probably just going to approve it, but my concern is setting a precedent. I thought there were other of these situations done, and now I hear that there's none done before this policy changed. I thought this was more common than that. I mean, why is there even a policy that went into effect in 2013? If anybody who wants to can just come and do it differently. Go ahead, Patty. I can see your answer over there.
It's not anyone who wants to.
Okay.
They still have to meet the criteria of having been hired prior to January 1st, 2003.
Yeah.
And they still have to have a certain number of years of service. So there's a limited group of people that have this ability to exercise this.
Okay.
Those hired after that date, I mean, eventually that language is going to age out because it won't apply anymore.
Okay.
Anyone hired after January 1st of 2012, there is no OPEB benefit.
Then they lost all of that because of the Act 10 and no union contracts. Because before the union contracts allowed them to do that, right?
So getting back to my question, there are restraints or criteria put on it by you that allow this to happen. How many other times prior to are that we have in place? Not just you. I don't. When I say you, it's like human resources.
Okay.
I don't mean you. But
the royal you.
How many times has this happened over the years? Even when it was allowed prior to 2011, do we know that?
Well, prior to 2011, there were contracts in place.
Okay.
Many contracts.
Yeah. Okay.
So
then it was just based on the contracts. Okay.
And what
okay.
may have been negotiated with.
All right. I mean, I guess I'm comfortable with not setting a precedent. I mean, if there's other things and parameters, as we heard earlier, that there are parameters in place that we that would have to be met. So I'm okay with this then. I just don't want to set a precedent and then have all of a sudden a number of people coming in and wanting to do this. Go ahead, Mark.
The other thing to consider too is if this costing came out where it would cost the county $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, then obviously that would be something that would be a no-go.
Yeah, but I'm also a policy guy. And I mean, if we have a policy in place, I want to know that it's okay that we're doing this. And that's my point.
And that's why it was changed so that it would come before finance, so that all that would be considered.
Okay, John.
So you said that you're thinking, like, money-wise, it's going to be about a wash for the county.
$40,000.
And that's based on the fact that the employee coming in will have a lower cost or a lower salary. Is that the idea?
Correct. Defer to Barna on the financial analysis.
But also conservatively, we assume that the new employee would be at family coverage, which potentially they could come in at single, so that could be a considerable savings there. So we did worst case scenario. In that instance, other estimates have to be put in there, and because the dollar amount was so small, that's why Claire is saying that it's basically a wash.
Patty?
I would just like to make a comment outside of this conversation to remind the committee that the OPEB policy was put in place to bring down that OPEB liability that was over
$210 million.
Thank you. I was going to say 216, but and it's now down to 45, and we've had to add life insurance in as part of that calculation. So this helped to lower that an unidentified death that the governments were incurring by offering these benefits, which used to be very inexpensive, that grew in size. And when that started to have to be calculated, the actuaries got involved, then it was realized how much of an impact that would have on future budgets. And this OPEB policy allowed us to bring that down. But then there are some that kind of had to be cut off. We understand that. There are some that kind of.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Supervisor Frederick.
I'm looking at, I know there's probably a personal reason, which is none of my business, but I look at Donna, who has been with us for 33 and a half years, has been a dedicated employee, asking for something, and whatever the personal reason is, that's her business. But I just think looking at this at a personal level, and I think it's a responsible thing to do, so I'm going to make a motion that we approve this.
I'll second Gerani's motion on that.
It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. Any further questions or comments on this? I didn't have a problem. I just want to make sure we're not setting a different precedent than the policy indicates. So I have no problem with this, and I will be supporting it. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Supervisor Franco.
Could I make a motion that we take a 5-minute break? We've been going for about 2 hours.
Yeah, we're on recess for 5 minutes.
Thanks.
Thank you. No problem.